On the morning of February 22, 1977, Bob Rowe, the favorite father of neighborhood kids in Mill Basin, New York, got up and clubbed his sleeping children to death with a baseball bat. Bobby Jr. was 15. Christopher, who was severely handicapped, was 12. The youngest was their adopted daughter, Jennifer. When Mary Rowe, Bob's wife, came home from work, he told her to close her eyes for a surprise. Then he clubbed her to death, too. Bob Rowe then tried to kill himself. For the first time that day, he didn't succeed. Bob Rowe was found not guilty by reason of insanity. That means no court could force him to stay in a mental institution. Now, in a sense, this is where the story Facing the Wind really begins. The law might excuse a man for committing murder because he was insane, but will society accept that man becoming better and being happy? Author Julie Salomon first heard about Bob Rowe when she was researching a mother's group that had formed in the early 1970s to help families with severely handicapped children. She says, to understand this story, you need to know about Bob Rowe.
He was a self-made man. He came from a very poor family. He was the first person in his family to go to college and then to go to law school on the GI Bill. His dream was to have some ideal of an American home and wife and child, and he had fulfilled that. He married Mary Rowe, also from a poor family. He got his job with Allstate Insurance, rose up through the ranks. They bought a nice house in Mill Basin. They had their son Bobby, who was a great kid, and then they had Christopher. And because of changes in the insurance industry, Bob himself, the nature of the work that he did, changed entirely. And so in his 40s, instead of feeling on top of the world, having accomplished what he'd hoped to the way he had felt maybe a decade earlier, he now felt that everything was slipping away. Mm-hmm. And he fell into a deep depression.
And he knew that. I mean, he was good enough at one point in his life, brave enough, I'll even say, to call for help, to ask to be tied up because he thought he'd hurt someone.
That's right. And he asked to be taken into psychiatric care, and he was institutionalized for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And the level of care he got, I would say, was minimal because he was a charming, outgoing guy. And just as he was the best father of a handicapped child, he became the best psychiatric patient. Mm-hmm. I think he wanted to get better, but I think there was something in the nature of his mental illness, which frankly I think none of the dozens and dozens and dozens of psychiatrists who ended up examining this man over time ever comprehended fully. Mm-hmm. I think his desire to be on top of the situation in every part of his life actually undermined him in a psychological and then in a tragic way.
Bob Rowe killed his family 2 years after he was first hospitalized. He spent less than 3 years in a mental institution. The decision to release him was medical, not legal. Bob Rowe spent the rest of his life trying to get his law license back. It was as if he was trying to reassemble his old life. He took college classes, met a woman named Colleen, who became an attorney herself. She knew his story, loved him still. They got married and had a child. Bob Rowe had been given a chance at a new life and found happiness. But was there just too much 70s nonsense going on at this time? Because it occurs to me, I'm not sure anybody ever looked at Bob Rowe and said, you're a monster. You killed your kids. You killed your wife. No, I don't think you should be executed, but my gosh, you shouldn't walk the earth a happy man again.
No. I mean, I think part of what happened was it may have been part of the climate of the times. And I also think that a lot of the people evaluating Bob Rowe throughout the system, the judges, the psychiatrists, related to him in some way. He was not a poor, uneducated person. He was a lawyer. He was well-spoken. And he was appealing. People liked him.
I think there are people who will wonder about Colleen. Did she never know a moment of fear?
I think she had moments of fear. I would say very few, though. There was a night when the house that they lived in, the apartment, caught fire, and Bob saved her life and saved her child. Mm-hmm. And I think after she felt eternally grateful to him for that.
I find it extraordinary what Colleen told you she said to him when he was about to die.
That now you're free to go back to your family?
She actually said, you'll see Mary again, you'll see Christopher again, you'll see Bobby again.
Absolutely. And throughout their marriage, photo albums were in the living room. the first family was always a presence with the second family.
Did you like Bob Rowe? I gather you never met him.
Never met him. My feelings about him fluctuated throughout the reporting of the book. I think when I first heard about him from the mothers and the women group, mm-hmm. I was appalled. I thought, the guy's a monster. Then when I met Colleen, who is a very intelligent person and who I like very much, mm-hmm. she benefited so much from him and was so persuasive on his behalf. And also, when I talked to all the people, not just Colleen, but dozens and dozens of friends who had known him before the killing and after, people loved this man. So it's very hard to look at somebody who elicited not just a casual, oh, yes, you know, the kind of thing you see on the evening news, yes, he was a very nice man, and then, of course, nobody knew who the person mm-hmm. at all. These were people who had known this man for years and adored him. And even now, after this terrible thing, many of those friends remained friends with him. I felt that it wasn't so easy as to say, he did this terrible thing, he's the devil. You have to say, he did this terrible thing, and I don't understand how it could have happened. And I think that's a very hard thing to grapple with.
Bob Rowe died of cancer in September 1997. Julie Solomon is a television critic for the New York Times and author of Facing the Wind, a true story of tragedy and reconciliation.